coming back home and taking a look at the JSE's performance amidst it all, managing to buck the overall global trend today with an upward momentum taking hold, up 0.6%, bolstered largely by the financial 15 space, it trading just over 1% to the good. The resources 10 and industrial 25 components in the meantime managing rises of 0.6%. Joining me in studio now for a closer look at the equity space is Stephen Schultz from Momentum. Thanks so much, Stephen, for joining us in studio this afternoon. Thank you. We've got the trading week this week expected to be subdued somewhat by the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday on Thursday. We've got issues around U.S.-China trade war and Brexit issues remaining unresolved as well. What exactly do you have your eye on for the week ahead?
Yeah, so look, it will certainly be an interesting week, both globally and domestically. Domestically, I think investors, all eyes on the Reserve Bank on Thursday. It is, of course, the final meeting and the final interest rate decision we'll be receiving from them this calendar year. As you mentioned, many market commentators expecting a 25 basis point increase. Mm-hmm. I don't think it is that much of a given. So there is certainly a case for a small increase. But at the same time, there is massive concern surrounding the fragile level of growth in the economy. We've seen inflation being one of the prime concerns, which would motivate an increase. But more recently, we're seeing a lot stronger South African rand, and we're seeing oil prices globally come down, which will soften inflation going forward.
And so you're erring on the side of SARB holding on rates this week.
I suppose I wouldn't be surprised with either result, but if I had to pencil something in, it would probably be a hold.
It's interesting that within this context, we've had Netcare out with results today and really emphasizing just how focused it is on the South African market right now. You know, it's closed the door on its UK business, BMI Healthcare. What have you made of its renewed and reinvigorated focus, let's call it that, within the very strained economic climate at this stage?
Yeah, so look, I suppose they directly contrast with the likes of MediClinic, which is probably the less favorable at the moment. I think they've had a very strong set of results. The market certainly liked their announcement today. I think initially they were up about 5.5%. A lot of talk of consolidating and investing in the domestic environment. We're seeing growth revenue-wise from the South African region coming in at about 8.5% for them, which is certainly decent in a constrained environment. We've seen a lot of consolidation. More recently, they've made a purchase, an acquisition of Akeso, if I pronounce it correctly, mm-hmm. which materially changes the operating nature of the business, disinvesting from the UK and adding another 800 beds locally to the business. Phenomenal set of results. You couldn't argue otherwise. We saw profit up about 5%, which is fairly decent in the environment. And again, directly contrasting to the likes of a MediClinic, which is doing a lot of offshore expansion and hurting them at the moment.
Absolutely. I mean, Netcare just showing, you know, that it's another company that tried its hand offshore, got its fingers severely burnt, and is now nursing its wounds back at home. Having said all of that, also pretty emphatic about the fact that it's not going to be investing in bricks and mortar or adding any more beds to its stable. The focus now becomes on running an efficient business, a lean, mean machine, and that would afford it the capacity to return any excess cash to shareholders. And I guess that, at the end of the day, getting investors very excited.
Yeah, look, I think the statement is clear. You know, complexity is definitely the enemy in our current environment. I think many companies during the good years overly complicate their business models. So back to basics certainly does excite investors. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of scope to not only dominate the South African market, but just to run a more efficient business, as you mentioned. So we saw even in the current set of results, we saw the number of beds tick up about 5.9%, which again is a material impact on the business without doing anything drastic, just doing simpler things better.
Absolutely. Let's look at Barloworld, because its headline earnings per share from continuing operations rose 18% as it's disposed of one of its assets, and that being its Iberian asset. It's now talking about buying another business from Caterpillar, and just talking to just how agile you've got to be in the current business climate.
Look, so I'll admit I probably was one of the few that misread the results initially. You know, I thought they were pretty average. Market disagreed. It was up over 4%. Look, there's a lot of moving and shaking going on in the business at the moment. I suppose what was particularly impressive is the 18% headline earnings growth that we saw. Also, their debt profile coming down slightly from 3.5 billion to 2.2, which is pleasing for investors. We saw a very unlikely boost coming in the form of Russian equipment ticking up quite nicely. And of course, the JV in the DRC is also more valuable today as a result of copper and cobalt prices globally increasing. But I think really, if you want to take a firm view on the company over and above the transactions, you need to take a view on the South African economy. Yeah. So you would need to see a meaningful uptick in growth in South Africa and a bit of comfort come through. And I suppose that needs to come from the mining charter.
Absolutely.
So an industry settled.
Well, Barloworld World has long stood as this barometer for economic growth in South Africa. What's your stock pick at the moment?
Stock pick tonight is Apple. I've said it before, but perhaps this time it would be a little bit more controversial in that it's had a 20% sell-off in US dollars since the beginning of October. A large part of the sell-off in the market now is investor anxiety surrounding saturation of their iPhone. There's a belief in the market at the moment that they will not be able to grow market share. Mm-hmm. That may well be. I think growth will be slow. I certainly do think they'll be able to maintain market share. A lot of the rooted anxiety also comes from some of their suppliers lowering expectations. Bear in mind what typically happens, the normal process, when they launch a new iPhone, in order to make sure that they can meet a best case scenario demand, is they communicate those numbers to suppliers. Once they're comfortable at those levels, the real numbers start trickling through, and there is usually a revision downwards. So I think perfectly normal for a business where hardware is solid, and I think they're going to slowly start adding service revenue. I think it's a good pick at these levels.
Okay, so one to watch. Let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Stephen, for having joined us in studio this evening. That, of course, Stephen Schultz from Momentum. Pioneer Foods released its annual results today, showing a 3% increase in revenue to 20 billion rand on the back of a 4% rise in volumes, including acquisitions. This, as trading conditions reflected weaker levels of consumer spend. Still, headline earnings per share rose a more robust 33%. And CEO Tertius Carstens joins us on the line now as we go through the group's annual performance. Thanks so much, Tertius, for your time this evening. So I've just blitzed through some of the headline numbers there, and that really putting the spotlight on cost discipline and I guess streamlining initiatives more than anything else.
And specifically also the performance of our larger categories, you know, maize, long life produce, cereals, and then our export business did deliver on expectations as well.
Okay, we'll drill down into those categories in just a bit. Before we do, I want to take a look at the demand scenario because you've had a second semester pointing to worsening conditions. I mean, what sense are you getting of the market you're catering to at the moment?
Well, I think we must be real about it and acknowledge that with relatively low or no economic growth, employment levels not where it should be, that the consumer is definitely under stress. The elevated fuel price obviously does not help either. So we take that as a fact, and therefore a reduction in demand overall.
It's key because it influences your ability, Tertius, to actually pass on costs. I mean, you've been busy with corrective price adjustments. To what extent are you able to pass costs on, and you know, at what cost in terms of sales that you're pushing through?
Yeah, Lisa, it's correct. To pass on pricing in our current trading environment takes quite a bit of agility. It's obviously a necessity given the underlying cost push that's in the system, be it from a raw material point of view or from an operating cost point of view. But you have to be diligent about it.
Diligent and one would assume gradual as well. So how are you actually implementing corrective price adjustments?
Well, by good and sound upfront and knowledge to our trade partners so that they can assess that. And then obviously it puts a lot of discipline back in the system for us to make sure that we are diligent in managing and mitigating cost increases within our control and within our operations.
So how's this all come to bear on your margins at the end of the day?
Well, you've seen that our margin obviously has lifted marginally off the prior year base. But there's no question that with some deflation still in the system in terms of the big categories, for example, selling prices of maize, mm-hmm. and then the underlying cost, that there is somewhat of a squeeze in the final result.
Let's drill down into things on a divisional basis. Essential Foods suffering a close enough to 5% decline in revenue, and you cite intensified competition and a consumer down trading. I want to focus on the latter, Tertius. How wide is your scope to catch those that are trading down?
Well, we participate at scale in these large staple food categories, so we believe that we've got the offerings to deliver on those. Just to point to the revenue decline is largely driven by deflation in the selling prices of maize, given the underlying cost movements. That was down by 22%. With some marginal inflation in some of our other categories.
Mm-hmm. On the groceries front, you saw negative volume growth and a consequent decline in profitability as well. What exactly is going on there, and how soon before you're able to turn that picture around?
Overall, if I may, overall volume growth in groceries was actually around 15%. But you might refer to specifically the acquisition that we did in the Heinz business,
yeah.
And that had a difficult year until we acquired it and integrated it in June. We know there's quite a bit of work to be done to turn that around, but we pleasantly surprised and thankful for the operational step up that had happened in the last 4 months, product availability as well as service delivery to customers.
Okay, so those are the divisions that cater more so to your local arena. I want to take a look at your international offering, because you cited that as a top as one of your bright spots in these earnings. And I mean, that reflecting the fact that a weaker rand presents somewhat of a double-edged sword for you, because you know, while input costs are on the up, it helps with the competitiveness of your exports. How much pressure is being offset by your international division at this stage?
Yeah, definitely. That was a tailwind for international exports of beverages, long-life juice into Africa. The team did an excellent job in exploiting opportunities within those markets that we trade in, but then the exchange rate did help. On the fruit export side, we had far more fruit available than the previous year, good quality crop, and strong demand internationally that lifted dollar price selling prices. So that was an upside for us as well.
Tertius, let's leave it there. Thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. That, of course, CEO of Pioneer Foods, Tertius Karstens. And that's just some activity playing out in the local company news arena. In the meantime, on the global front, Nissan plans to fire its chairman. And we get more detail on that straight after the break. Welcome back. You're watching Taking Stock right here on Business Day TV. Well, automaker Nissan has accused its chairman, Carlos Ghosn, of acts of misconduct. For more on exactly what's been playing out, let's head over to Bronwyn. Bronwyn.
Thanks, Alicia. Let's jump straight into it with a look at some company news. Nissan's chair is under investigation after he allegedly violated Japanese financial law. In a statement, the auto giant says that over many years, Carlos Ghosn underreported compensations amounts to the Tokyo Stock Exchange. Nissan shares had already stopped trading when the news broke, but Renault has come under pressure as Ghosn is CEO and chair of the French automaker as well. So for some analysis of this, let's cross to Paul Christian Brits from Deutsche Welle. Paul, thanks so much for your time today. So this news took everyone by surprise, and we can see that in how hard hit Renault's share price has been today. Standing on the trading floor there in Frankfurt, what conversations have you been having about what this spells for the company going forward?
Well, it was quite a shock in Paris as well as here in Frankfurt, where the share price dipped 13%, down to 13% at one point. It's at minus 10 now. And really, yeah, a big, big shocker. And the question, of course, is with Ghosn gone, potentially, what is going to happen to this alliance between Renault, Nissan, and Mitsubishi in the mix as well? Because Ghosn was such a charismatic key figure in this alliance. I met him personally a couple of times, and he just he exerts this extreme self-confidence, a man of big words as well. He once said that a CEO should have 100% freedom and take 100% of responsibility for what he does. Now, he may have pushed it a little too far, but the big question is, afterwards, who's going to take his place? And that this is a big question. Also shows since France's Emmanuel Macron, president of France, is also a shareholder. France is also a shareholder of the company. Stepped up and said that the country would have a very, very close look at how Renault is doing in the future and this whole alliance to make sure that there's stability in this alliance. So that is a big concern, this potentially falling apart.
So there could be lots of changes on the cards there, but this news certainly a shock for trading floors to get the week started. And then let's perhaps look ahead, because we have earnings starting to peter out and politics and developments on the macroeconomic front then start to drive news flow. And speaking to that, we've had for the first time in history the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation meeting end without a joint communique, and it's because of trade disagreements, especially between China and the US, so no surprise there either.
Not a big surprise, but definitely reason for concern because of what it spells for global trade. In nearly 30 years, this summit has always ended with a communique. And it's not that it was binding or, you know, anything spectacular, really, but the fact that these two nations can't even agree on that just shows how deep this rift is between the two countries. Mike Pence and China's President Xi Jinping throwing around a war of words. Pence accusing China of strategically offering credit to other countries and warning them not to get into any binding agreements with them or get tied up in China's policy, and China retaliating, really, warning not to close the trade borders. So, yeah, similar problems we see at the World Trade Organization. This dispute really rattles international trade, and it may be on display again this month, as in Argentina, the G20 countries are meeting later this month, where President Donald Trump and President Xi Jinping will meet face to face.
And then before we end off, Paul, your president, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, is here on a three-day visit to South Africa. He's told local press that it's time for a new start in relationships between our two countries. But what does he mean exactly by that? What can we expect to come from this visit?
Well, it's already kind of a new start because it's the first time that a German president is visiting South Africa in 20 years. And that's despite both countries having very, very close relationships. That's both political and economically. South Africa is Germany's number one bilateral trade partner on the African continent. And in 2017, Germany was South Africa's third largest, with a lot of exports going both directions, really. He is bringing a business delegation, among which are chief executives from German industrial giant Siemens and also the German development bank KfW. And Steinmeier is going to sign a deal on a credit to Cape Town, which will be used to work on the wastewater infrastructure of the city, improving the wastewater infrastructure here. He also mentioned that especially African youth need more and better business job prospects, and bringing in German companies might help. There's definitely going to be investment in the country, and he's hoping that this can forge closer relationships between Germany and South Africa.
It certainly comes at a significant time as our own president looks to increase investment and foster growth as we go ahead. But Paul, let's leave it there for today. Perhaps we'll check in on developments on that end throughout the week. Paul Christian Brits is from Deutsche Welle, and that's a quick look at the events making headlines across the globe. Alicia, it's back to you.
Thanks, Bronwyn. And on that note, that's where I leave things with you for now. Stay tuned for Tomorrow Today coming up straight after the break. And I'll see you back at 7 o'clock with your full news bulletin. What's your stock pick at the moment?
Stock pick tonight is Apple. I've said it before, but perhaps this time it would be a little bit more controversial in that it's had a 20% sell-off in US dollars since the beginning of October. A large part of the sell-off in the market now is investor anxiety surrounding saturation of their iPhone. There's a belief in the market at the moment that they will not be able to grow market share. Mm-hmm. That may well be. I think growth will be slow. I certainly do think they'll be able to maintain market share. A lot of the rooted anxiety also comes from some of their suppliers lowering expectations. Bear in mind what typically happens, the normal process, when they launch a new iPhone, in order to make sure that they can meet a best case scenario demand, is they communicate those numbers to suppliers. Once they're comfortable at those levels, the real numbers start trickling through, and there is usually a revision downwards. So I think perfectly normal for a business where hardware is solid, and I think they're going to slowly start adding service revenue. I think it's a good pick at these levels.
Okay, so one to watch. Let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Stephen, for having joined us in studio this evening. That, of course, Stephen Schultz from Momentum.